The Frequency 49 show is brought to you by the Niner Empire GB.
Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm your host, Simon Holdsworth. And joining me this week are the ever-present Deepak Gohil and our Deutscher Freund, Michael Wandrei. Hello to you both.
Evening.
Guten Abend.
Week 14 and the 49ers hosted Seattle at Levi Stadium, aiming to continue their recent momentum and knowing that a victory combined with an Eagles loss would give them the number one seed in the NFC with four games to go. In a decidedly chippy affair, the 49ers' explosive players came to the fore to see them home 28-16. Guys, Brock Purdy for MVP now, surely.
Oh, well,
I'm more of a CMC for MVP guy, but Brock Purdy should be the runner-up behind CMC. But first of all, a shout-out to the New York Giants, who also brought us into the playoffs yesterday.
Beating
the Packers.
That's right. Yeah, we've confirmed the playoff berth.
You know what? By all means, Brock Purdy for MVP. I'm not even convinced if he's the MVP on the 49ers. There's so many players that are valuable to the team, and the contributions that they're making are cataclysmic. They're enormous contributors. But is this Brock's rookie season, or are they not counting it as his rookie season? It's his first season as a starter, right?
Yeah, it's his first season as a starter, but I think you'd say he was a second-year player because he took us so deep last year to the NFC Championship game.
It was almost playing like a five-year veteran.
But I think the NFL counts him as a one-year veteran because had his rookie season last season. But one title he should surely win should be Comeback Player of the Year. I mean, he literally tore his UCL, and that's a death penalty for most quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And he came back swinging.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's look at the numbers. And there are some staggering numbers on the offensive side of the ball. So Purdy was 19 of 27 for a career-high 368 yards. Two touchdowns and an interception off another deflection. Although you could argue that the pass was a little bit inaccurate, which is not like him. But look at the other guys. CMC, who you mentioned, Michael, 145 yards rushing, average of 9.06 on 16 carries. And then you look at the... I don't think I've ever seen this from one team. Deebo Samuel, 149 yards on 7 receptions. Brandon Ayuk, 126 yards. George Kittle, 76 yards. Those numbers are just incredible, aren't they?
And you know what, though? They weren't against a cupcake team either. Seattle played Dallas the week before and they went toe-to-toe till the very end. And
yeah,
I think our game only sort of became safe early in after the fourth quarter. Until then, it was still touch and go. We could have gone either way, really.
Definitely. And one of the things I wanted to touch on was, you know, I think Seattle, they're on a kind of bit of a losing skid. But one thing that we couldn't have prepared for was Geno Smith not being there, because that was a game time decision. And I think obviously on the defensive side of the ball, you watch all the tape, you come up with the scheme schematically. They had Kenneth Walker back and Geno Smith missing. And Geno Smith and Drew Lock are very, very different in terms of QBs. And I think that you saw that when they, you know, we started the game off with that 72-yard run by CMC, didn't we? And, you know, have two plays and we're in the end zone. And then Seattle just marched down the field and it was kind of like, this has the feelings early on of a potential trap, because we saw what happened with Cleveland, didn't they? And their backup QB. But we made the adjustments. I mean, Kenneth Walker is a great running back. He's an absolute stud. But I thought we made the alterations and the defense was again pretty stellar.
But it took a while for the offense to find its gear, shall we say?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and that's what happened in Philadelphia as well. Again, we started slowly, relatively. I mean, the CMC 73-yard breakout play aside, it did take a little bit of time for the offense to warm up and get going. And I'm beginning to wonder why that is. That's two games in a row. We're seeing the offense really sort of struggling to establish itself in the first couple of possessions, you know. It is a worry. Mind you, on our first possession, we scored a touchdown, so no complaint there, you know, no complaint there.
I think it's because, at least for me, it looked like against Philly and against against the Seahawks, Shanahan deviated from his normal game plan with first pounding the opponent and then starting passing. And I have the feeling he wants to get Brock into rhythm very fast. And so at the first real run by, I think even the touchdown was a short pass to McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. But the first real run after that first run was end of the first quarter. And until then, they always tried throwing the ball or some short runs.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen in as long as I've been watching the NFL where on the first possession the running back after one play is so tired that he can't follow it up and run the second play because they had to bring Jordan Mason in to punch it in because he was first run from scrimmage and he's, you know, 73 yards up, and it was one of those where he did a bit of zigzagging at the end, didn't he, as well? So, but yeah, I mean. Look, we've also touched on Deebo Samuel. He is the X factor for me. He's the guy that takes our offense from being good to great for me. And the way he's performing at the minute, teams are absolutely scared to death of him.
He's destroying teams, isn't he? I mean, he really is that X factor that takes this team above and beyond the line. You know, he really is a statement player. He's got the attitude and he backs it up with his play. And I think that's why players really don't like him, is when he starts mouthing off, they know he's actually going to do it. He's really giving them a prediction more than anything else. This is what I'm going to do to you. But interesting, you mentioned about Brock Purdy earlier. Deebo reckons that Brock is MVP material.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All the guys do. You listen to them all and they're all waxing lyrical about him. I read an interesting quote from Brock Purdy after the game on Sunday. And he claims that since his operation, his arm actually feels stronger than it was beforehand. And, you know, thinking back, did we see perhaps a little bit of evidence of that with that long ball to Deebo for that long touchdown? Because that was hell of a throw.
But he's not afraid to have a go with the deep ball. Remember the one he did to Brendan Ayuk? I think that was the Philly game. And Shanahan was like, well, what the hell's he doing? You know, no, that was Tampa Bay, I think. He took a shot. But I wonder whether it's in his head that people think he's a system quarterback or not. I personally don't think he cares. I think he just plays his own game. I really do think he plays his game. And He is the perfect foil for Shanny's offense. That really was the missing piece. I know they talk lyrical about Jimmy, but this guy is not Jimmy.
No.
But in the end,
go on. Sorry, Michael.
In the end, I think that will be the factor why he won't get MVP, because even with limited Jimmy, we had a top 10 offense. And Purdy put it in the top five now, but the people will always say it's the players that surround him, because Jimmy worked in that offense too. We all see what Jimmy can do in Las Vegas. He can literally do nothing. And they will always that will come down to Purdy, that it's the offense that surrounds him will make him better. The people that are not 100% with the 49ers won't see that there is a difference between Jimmy and Purdy, and that Purdy actually makes the offense better, and Jimmy really profited from the offense.
So yeah, I mean, how many times? What I was going to say was, how many times last year, D, when we had Jimmy, or over the last couple of years, have we said he's going to get our receivers hurt because he's not throwing them open, he's not throwing them in stride?
True.
And I think that is one of the big differences with Purdy is that, and this is the reason why there is so many yards after the catch, is that his throwing is so damn accurate.
Yeah.
And he's hitting them in stride every single time, is that whilst Purdy is helped by his receivers, he's actually making them better because he's giving them the platform to go and do what they do, those skill players, because he's hitting them in stride every single time.
But not to labour the point about Jimmy, but we really did win despite him, not because of him. We're winning games now because the offense is contributing. Last season and possibly the season before, we had a huge support from the defense to keep us in games, and then somehow, with the weapons we've got, figure out a way to win. But I think we are, and I really hate saying this term, as much as I hate saying system quarterback, we're playing complementary football, which is not a term that I like. But the offense is doing its bit now, whereas it didn't really used to before. But it is now, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you mentioned complimentary football. Were we not robbed of one of the great special teams players by a 49er on Sunday?
Yeah.
What was he doing?
Oh, my goodness. I was so angry, not with Ronnie Bell, with the referee, because when you look at the cameras, you can clearly see Ronnie Bell is slipping over his own feet, and the referee throws a flag for low block. That wasn't a block, that was stumbling into the opponent, and the opponent ran into him. That was the most funny thing. They both ran into the same direction, and Bell slipped, and the defender just ran into him. And sorry, I wouldn't have given a flag for that.
No, that also negated the late hit out of bounds, didn't it? So it would have been the Wisnowski run plus a tag another 15 yards on as well for unnecessary roughness.
Which is crazy because a 5-yard penalty negates a 15-yard penalty, more or less.
Yeah, but that's the thing that only a live and off ball foul don't offset. So if you get, for example, last week in Philadelphia, we got the 15 yards live foul for Dre. If the sideline of the Eagles would have gotten a 15-yard foul for Big Dom, it wouldn't be offsetting penalty. It just would be you go 15 yards in one direction and then in the other direction.
Correct. Yeah.
Actually, Big Dom is a perfect segue into some afters with Fred Warner and DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I was going to come on to that.
We could have done with the Big Dom on our sidelines then, couldn't we?
I mean, DK Metcalf and his big dummy that was spat out. And, I thought it was a little bit unlike Fred to react like he did. But then the Shanahan stories have come out today saying that he offered people Christmas presents and things like that. And you kind of go, okay, this is taking on a whole new lease of life. And, you know, mission accomplished, really. If he's got a questionable attitude, then, you know, I mean, that first drive, he torched. I think it was Ambry Thomas a couple of times. That catch that he made for the touchdown was unbelievable. But then barely got targeted. And to be fair, two targets for him after that led to two interceptions, which was fantastic to see.
Mm-hmm. But the Seahawks fan already cry Bountygate about it. Also, I think the rumors that Shanahan gives presents to his to the player who takes out DK, I think they come from a Seahawks speed writer, because I can't imagine that someone would tell the media, yeah, my coach gives me presents just for taking out DK. It was clever by Fred Warner. He pushed him a little bit when he was on the ground, and then he let him explode. It was almost the same with Big Dom. The difference was Fred is a player. He can do that, and Big Dom can't do that. But it's like with Dre last week. Don't let your opponent provoke you, then you don't get the flag. The same thing with Lenoir, who got the ejection as well. The whole situation was already solved. Don't jump into there like an idiot. Keep yourself out of there.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, just touching on that, have we got a little reason to be a little bit concerned, given that's two ejections in 2 weeks?
I think we do, Simon.
Or are we playing with that chip national?
I think also it ties in with one of the questions that we got asked about Wilkes being on the sideline, whether what kind of influence that's having on the defense. It's actually putting the players closer together, I think, because Lenoir went after DK because he put his hands on Jimmy Ward. On Fred Warner. He wasn't having it. That's my mate. You're not going to mess with him, you know. But I think this is a team that's inviting physicality because it wants to be physical. And they are a team that's looking for a fight. There's no doubt about it. This Niner team does spoil for a fight because it's not afraid of, because they know they're going to win it. That's why.
And the nature of the way they play, the physical style of the way they play, is that they can, when they get so on top, I mean, I think the reason why DK Metcalf got so animated was because Fred Warner threw a lateral on an interception, which is great fine when he's sort of 40 points up. But I listened to his podcast again this week, and he kind of goes, I learned something very valuable this week. You know, never throw a lateral when it's only a two-score game. So he must have had a flea in his ear after the game from Wilkes or Shanahan about throwing that lateral.
But funny thing is, shout out to Niner Empire Austria, Lucas from them showed a video of the Lenoir situation, and in the video you can clearly see the hand that is punching down the helmet from the player. That was the ejection. That wasn't Lenoir's hand, because it was white gloves, and Lenoir had black gloves, and you could really see that. So it was a mistaken identity by the referees who took out the wrong player of our team.
Okay, interesting. That's really, really interesting. I didn't see that thing though.
I mean, I think Metcalf was ejected when the game was long won anyway.
And I think that's the reason why he got so chippy, is because he knew it. You know, when there's a real chance of somebody coming back and getting in the game, your head's screwed on, isn't it? And your focus is solely on the game. When you start looking for other things to be focused on, you know the game's gone, I think, subconsciously.
If we got rid of him in the first half, that's different. Then, job well done,
How do we call it in soccer? If a soccer player does it, a revenge foul?
Yeah. I think that's fair to say. It was like a revenge sort of
retribution kind of thing, wasn't it? Yeah.
But there is a lot of bad blood when we're playing these games recently. You know, we are really looking and spoiling for a fight, and that's cool in terms of a machismo point of view, but it can hurt you from winning. It can hold you back. It can punish you for all the hard work that you've done. Just being a dick can undo everything, you know.
It can, and I think. But when you're top of the division and top of the conference, you're there with a big target on your back. And like you said, Deepak, with the manner that we play, the physical style that we play, we want to punch people in the mouth. And you know, when teams are getting absolutely humiliated, they don't like it, and nobody likes it. And I think that is part of the reason we're getting a lot of this kind of chippiness, is because teams just don't know how else to respond to the shellacking that they're getting, because they try everything and nothing works. So they kind of revert to type. But the 49ers, as you say, aren't a team to go around, you know, prodding them and provoking them, because they will literally, you know, turning up in Philly in all black for the funeral. That's the attitude that these guys have got.
Yeah. But it was a bruising, bruising, bruising game. I mean, CMC's head when he takes his helmet off, you know, I'm like, my God, this guy must be aching in places he didn't even know he had places in. It was a tough encounter, very physical game of football.
It was a physical game of football.
It won't be easier. I mean, okay, next week we will face a team we should beat. Then we will face the Ravens, which will be a slugfest as well. Then it's the Commanders we should beat, and then it's the Rams, and the Rams can qualify for the playoffs, but they, when push comes to shove, they have to beat us for it, like we had to beat them in 2021.
Yeah. Well, let's look at next week. Let's have a look at next week. So, obviously, we go over to State Farm Stadium, it's now called, I believe, to take on the Cardinals, who are a team in transition, I think it's fair to say. But again, it's a divisional rival. We're still in the NFC West. You know, just looking at the sort of team rankings for both teams, the 49ers have the second-ranked offense. Cardinals is 26th. We have the seventh-ranked defense. Cardinals is 23rd. We're third in passing, they're 30th, and we're third in rushing, and they're 9th. So everything would suggest that this is a, you know, it's almost foregone conclusion. But the NFL is never, ever, ever like that. And again, listening to Fred Warner's podcast, I think that 3-game skid burnt them a lot. I think they got complacent, and he is absolutely 100% focused that doesn't happen again. And he's saying everybody in the building is, it's just one game at a time. We cannot afford to look any further in the future.
But we haven't faced Kyler Murray since 2021. Someone in the NRG pointed that out today. Yeah. We haven't faced him since 2021, and we always had problem with mobile quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And it could also be a trap game. I mean, if even one or two players have in their mind, it's just Arizona. We will beat them for sure. Exactly. It could be a trap game. If we win it, I would say we're in it, but we're already in it. But if we win it, the West is ours, because then neither the Rams nor the Seahawks can't get us anymore. But if we lose it, the race for the West still is open.
Yeah.
I think the reason why we won't lose is, I think the mindset now is that they've had to overcome a lot of odds to get the top seed after dropping 3 in a row. You know, you didn't think we were going to be top seed in the NFC after we dropped that last game against Minnesota, right? And I think now it's about protecting the prize rather than getting the prize. They want that week off big time, you know. On a personal level, I don't care what seed we come in. We'll beat whoever we have to beat now. We've seen that we can do it. But I think that 1 week of extra rest could really be the difference that makes a difference. And for that reason, I think the players' attitude will be about protect the top seed that we've got now, because it's in our hands. And Michael's right. It could be a trap game, but again, that's a term I don't like, because I think every single game is a trap game. You know, I don't think Green Bay approached New York thinking, well, this is a trap game, you know, or Miami and Tennessee. Miami is saying this is a trap game. I think the margins are so small in the NFL. Literally anybody can beat anybody.
100%. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, we gave thanks to the Giants for beating Green Bay. There's also another team that we need to give thanks for giving us the number one seed, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles for losing.
But look what
that other team for winning. Absolutely.
I just had fear you say the other team.
they've dropped from top seed to 5. But look how far the mighty fall. You know, it's a huge tumble, because then they'll be looking at a wild card entry.
Yeah.
But I think both them and Dallas have a loss in them, further losses in them. I think Dallas definitely does.
Dallas' schedule is quite hard. They've got a tough schedule. They've got Buffalo, they've got Miami, and they've got some
Lions.
Detroit.
Yeah, Lions, and then Commanders or Giants. I think it's Giants, but I'm not sure.
Who's this? Yeah. The Cowboys.
The Cowgirls.
Yeah, and plus they're playing a dome. If they're playing in Buffalo in early January or whenever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a game that they want to be in.
But even if they didn't have a dome, I mean, Texas isn't known for being cold. So even then, they would have a problem up there.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to first seed, is the Eagles. The Eagles don't have any opponent they can't beat anymore. They have the Seahawks, they have the Cardinals, they have the Commanders. They have the Seahawks, the Cardinals, and the Giants twice. So Commanders were the Cowboys.
I actually fancied the Giants in one of them, because it's such a huge rivalry game, Giants and Eagles. Colossal rivalry game. Yeah. I can see New York picking up one of those. Not both, but I think they'll pick up one.
Yeah, and we have the Ravens. I mean, the linchpin in our game plan will be the Ravens or the Rams. The Rams, if they still have a chance to get in the playoffs, and even then, the Rams don't want to help us any in any way. And the Ravens, they want to be number one seed in the AFC. So, I mean, whoever wins the Ravens-Niners matchup will have the one seed in their division, in their conference.
Did you see the Ravens-Rams game on Sunday? That was wild.
Yeah, they pushed them hard, didn't they? Neither team really wild. Give up on that one. Overtime, yeah, I think it went to.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did go to overtime. Now, I don't know whether that is the Ravens aren't quite as good as we think they are, or whether the Rams are pretty resurgent.
I mean, that sort of takes away this mentality, or this sometimes people have a chain of thought. We beat X and X beat Y, therefore we can beat Y. You know, no, it doesn't work that
NFL's
way.
NFL is all about matchups and mismatches, and certain teams just line up better against other certain teams.
Yeah, but the Ravens have everything they need to beat us. Yeah. We have a bad run defense, and they have a good run game, and that's why it's the hardest game we will face.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so what about a prediction for Sunday, guys? Are you gonna give us one?
Yeah, sure. I'm doing well with my 2-score wins. I think it'll be another 2-score win again for us. Nice and sort of, I wouldn't say nice. I think it's actually going to be another physical game. I think Murray is going to have his little run around on us, but we've got some defensive ends that he'll be running for his life rather than running away, gaining positive yardage. I think we're going to handle things okay. We're going to be fine.
I stick with my 1-score tips, because whenever I tip more than that, we lost. I tip it will be a narrow game again, and we will barely beat the Cardinals, but we will beat them.
Well, the last game early on in the season at Levi's was 35-16, and I think we're pretty much about the same. I think I could see it being very, very similar to that. Yeah. You know, Kyler Murray will get his couple of runaround scores, but then we'll put the hammer down like we have done all season. So that's where I think we'll finish. But we asked for some questions from the group. Paul McDonald, hi Paul, asks, should we rest any players against the Cardinals in preparation for the Ravens? Dee, I'll let you go first on that one.
No, I don't think we should rest anybody, because I think Seattle highlighted the type of difficult game that a team with a championship aspiration has to go out and win. Seattle are they're not a top tier side, but they're certainly an upper of the middle tier. They're the teams you have to beat. And I think we need the continuity as well. So therefore, I don't think we should rest players. By all means, if it's a blowout going into the fourth quarter, then yeah, take them off, you know, let the kids have a go. But other than that, I think we need to be full on and send the message that we want to win this Super Bowl, you know.
Michael?
I would go a bit further. I would say, if we are already away 2 or 3 scores at the halftime, let CMC rest for sure, because he needs a rest. And give Darnold a bit of praxis for all cases, so he doesn't come in if he has to come in this season without any praxis. So let him play after the halftime, but only if it's a 2 or 3 or 3 or 4 score lead.
I think you're both right. I think that the way to win this game is to get up and get up a big early-ish, might be say by halftime, come out, be 3 or 4 scores up, and then pull the starters. That's the best way to rest them, rather than, I think it's a dangerous game, resting players. Particularly, like you say, in the NFL, you know, if players are in the groove, you need to keep them in the groove. I understand they get injuries and there's a potential injury potential and things like that, but for me, you play them, get them to do their job, and then pull them the hell out of there. Jason Argo, another friend of the show. Hi, Jason. Asks, now we're heading into the playoffs. What are our weaknesses that other teams can try to exploit? Michael, have we got any weaknesses?
First of all, run defense. Our run defense gets stronger each time, but it's still our weakness, I would say. And that our starting cornerbacks are either get ejected or they get hurt, like Ward. I don't know if anyone heard something of Ward, but he came out of the game with a knee issue. And, I mean, we got Verrett back into practice squad. That could be our weakness.
The latest to come out of camp on Ward and Hargrave, who both came out of the game on Sunday, is that they have a chance to play on Sunday. So okay. they're not absolutely ruled out, but they're day-to-day. Dre Greenlaw is day-to-day as well. He had a bit of a bang. Arik Armstead, they don't expect Arik Armstead to play, although there's a chance, but they think that he might be the one guy where they kind of go, you know what, we'll kind of give him a bit of rest. I think the D-line is where we are heavily stacked. I mean, there's a young guy who's come in, and is it Kayla? Who's come in, and he got a sack against Philadelphia. He's come in and done really, really well. So I think...
Yeah, but... one thing about Armstead, I know we always blame Armstead for taking that huge money and DeForest Buckner leaving. But if you look all the time when Armstead didn't play in the center of the defensive line was weaker than when he played. He isn't as shiny as Buckner was, but he is the anchor of our defensive line.
I agree. He's got a huge wingspan. He's a giant human being, Arik Armstead, but he's not your stereotypical interior defensive lineman, is he? They're normally big-bodied, you know, but Arik Armstead has got a wingspan on him. His arms come out of nowhere, and the amount of times when he plugs gaps with his arms and makes arms tackles, which enables other players to, which slows the running back down, which gives other players the time to get there, is invaluable, and I think we do miss him in the run game, definitely in the run defense, definitely. But yeah, and then there was another question from Paul, which I think we touched on earlier, didn't we? We wanted to. It was your suggestion, Michael, actually, about having a quick look and having a look at which 49ers would perhaps be picked for the Pro Bowl this year, and which ones would probably end up being All Pro. I think we've probably got five or six on each side of the ball. Dee, do you want to go first with that, mate? If we go for possible Pro Bowlers firstly, and see who we're
really going take your pick.
Exactly.
You know, offense obvious: Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, Brendan Ayuk. Do you know George Kittle is All Pro all the time? I'll tell you who's been a little quiet is Kyle Juszczyk. Juice has been a bit quiet.
He'll still get a Pro Bowl bit because he's the best footballer. Oh,
yeah. And my favorite one of all, Silverback.
Yeah.
Defense, again, you know, Chase Young, Bosa. So many to choose from.
Fred Warner. It wouldn't surprise me if Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw were both All-Pro this year.
It's an embarrassment of riches, really, isn't it? I mean, there's so many players we've got that we can say, yeah, this guy, this guy, this guy. There's so many. It's just unreal.
Yeah, no, absolutely, guys. Absolutely. Michael, did you want to say it was your suggestion?
I see the same players, but unfortunately for the NFL, our players won't have time for the Pro Bowl because they will play a week later in Las Vegas.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But they'll still get picked, though, won't they?
Yeah, I would say the same. I mean, when you look at the statistics at the moment, most 49ers players are in the first or starters are in the first five places for their position. Some are on number one, but it's only the popularity vote. It's only a third of all the votes. Most are on number one. Some are on two. I think the worst of the starters is Trent Williams on five, which is ridiculous for me. He's the best tackle in the league. The best tackle, if you don't count holding your opponent the whole time, Lane Johnson. So it's a bit ridiculous that Trent is only number five on his position.
That is crazy. That is crazy. But I think the general consensus is that we will be well represented on the All Pro team and on and on the Pro Bowl team as well. So
All Pros will be Christian McCaffrey and Fred Warner for sure.
100%.
Yeah, and on wide receiver, I would say Ayuk has an All-Pro season too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has the second 1,000-yard season in a row. And we have the first 1,000-yard duo since Frank Gore and Michael Crabtree with CMC and with Ayuk. And we also can get a 1,000-yard team with Kittle. Is in range of 1,000 yards. He needs about 60 yards per game.
Yeah.
And Debo is in range of 1,000 yards.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. Absolutely.
You're showing us your phone, Simon. Is there an alert on there?
Yeah, no. I've got 5 minutes battery left on my laptop, so we'll probably need to wrap things up. I was just trying to show you that. But
Then I would like to say my tips for NFL honors before we go. Well. I would say MVP, CMC.
Okay.
Comeback player, Purdy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say those two and Ayuk are in the running for Offensive Player of the Year as well, or Debo.
Yeah.
And on the defensive side, sorry, but at the moment I don't see anyone on the defensive side because I think Bosa needed too long to get in rhythm. Otherwise, I would have seen him as depoy, but he needed too long. And we don't have a rookie that played long enough for one of the offensive or defensive rookies of the year.
What about Fred Warner?
Fred Warner,
maybe defensive player of the year, but I think there are other players who are more shiny than him because he mostly makes tackles. I mean, he already broke the 100 tackles again, but people mostly only look on tackles for loss or on sacks.
Miles Garrett got off a train, didn't he? But he's slowed up. But Fred Warner for me is probably our best player. He sets the tone. On the defensive side of the ball. But
isn't it funny how cynical TV analysts are? Now the MVP talk is all about Dak Prescott. They're playing that December football. What were they playing in October, boys? That's what I'd like to know.
Exactly. Okay, guys, cool. Well, another great show. And I think if Vanessa anyone's got anything to add, we should perhaps wrap that up.
Nope. Arizona should be a good one, though. Don't miss it.
It should absolutely be a good one. Okay, then, on behalf of Deepak Gohill and Michael Wandre, I've been your host, Simon Holdsworth. This has been the Frequency 49 Show. Go Niners!
Go Niners!
It's working!
So, the only thing you have to do is to get Scott Hansen